And from the KTOO newsroom right here in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. A black bear cub euthanized at Glacier Bay National Park this fall is the first in the country to test positive for a highly contagious strain of bird flu. Park visitors first noticed the animal's strange behavior. KRBD's Reagan Miller has a story.
A cub was having a hard time walking and struggled to keep up with its two siblings and mother at Bartlett Cove and Glacier Bay National Park. Kimberly Beckman is a wildlife veterinarian for the state's Department of Fish and Game. She says concerned park visitors captured videos of the cub in October.
They saw the bear cub. They thought it was drunk. It was stumbling and then was abandoned by the mothers.
Those symptoms are common with the strain, also called H5N1. It causes exhaustion and neurological problems like seizures. Beckman says the bear had no chance of survival at that point.
It was very sad to see the animal's not going to recover. Its brain was swollen, and it would have died probably within hours had it not been euthanized.
After euthanizing the cub, scientists took swabs and a sample of the bear's brain to test for rabies and canine distemper. They sent the samples to labs in Washington and New York for analysis. Beckman says the results came back positive for the strain of flu known as highly pathogenic avian influenza, or high-path AI for short.
Test all wildlife that die with clinical signs or that are suspicious of having inflammation of the brain, encephalitis, for rabies. And we had to do the rabies testing on this animal before we could test it for high-path AI because of the risk from the tissues if it was infected with rabies.
It's the first time the strain has been spotted in an Alaska bear. Wildlife officials say two foxes have also tested positive this year, one in Unalaska and one in Unalakleet. Beckman says the only other bear diagnosed with the strain was an adult female black bear in Quebec.
Because it was the first report in the U.S., that makes it reportable to the World Organization for Animal Health. They'll report, the federal government needs to report that because of it being considered a foreign animal disease and of international importance.
Beckman says the cub found at Bartlett Cove was likely infected after scavenging a sick or dead bird.
They have to inhale a large dose or, while they're scavenging an infected bird, then get that virus laden into their respiratory passages. So it does not go bear to bear.
Animals can also become infected by the virus by ingesting water that has been contaminated by sick waterfowl. She says the risk to humans is very low. Just 4 people have tested positive for the H5N1 flu worldwide, and just 1 in North America. But the virus has devastated poultry and wild birds. Nearly 50 million have been killed or euthanized this year alone, according to the CDC. In Alaska, wildlife officials say the Matanuska-Susitna burrow is still a hotspot for infections among backyard flocks. Beckman also says Sitka has recently seen infections among eagles. Fish and Game also reported infections among shorebirds, ravens, and waterfowl statewide this summer. Wildlife officials say residents should report sick, orphaned, or dead animals to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
The northern British Columbia city of Prince Rupert is looking to an international partner to grow its cruise ship port as the Alaska market continues to expand. The UK-based firm Global Ports Holding announced last week that it had signed a 10-year agreement with an optional 10-year extension with the Prince Rupert Port Authority to manage cruise services. Head of Business Development Colin Murphy says they aim to grow Prince Rupert's tourism sector.
One of the challenges they have there is that because the volumes have been reasonably low, it's been difficult for local tour providers and stakeholders to comfortably invest in improving the guest experience there by providing more tours and more experiences and so on. So that's a point of emphasis for us going forward to help Prince Rupert be more successful.
He says the deal doesn't commit Global Port Holding to any infrastructure investments up front, but otherwise declined to discuss the financial terms. Prince Rupert welcomed about 41,000 cruise passengers this year, and that's expected to double next year. Murphy says the one-berth port has already booked calls from cruise company giants Carnival, and Princess. Murphy says he doesn't expect Prince Rupert to grow as large as some of the massive Alaska cruise ports that welcome more than a million passengers each year, at least not for a while. But he says Prince Rupert is poised to take advantage of increasing congestion at existing ports, both in Alaska and further south.
You know, long term, we think all of the cruise lines are going to be, you know, more focused on finding berths for their ships. So having a port in somewhere so close to the Alaskan market as Prince Rupert is, for us, is very key.
Murphy says he expects Prince Rupert to serve primarily as a transit port rather than somewhere that passengers start or end their cruises. But he says there has been some interest from smaller cruise operators in making Prince Rupert a turnaround port. Global Ports Holding was one of two companies that bid to take over Ketchikan's port as the community considered a private-public partnership. Ketchikan's city council ultimately rejected the bid and chose to keep the port under the city management in a 4-3 vote last year. The Prince Rupert deal is the UK company's first investment in the Alaska market. Homer's Library Advisory Board is deciding what to do with more than 50 children's books with LGBTQ themes. And as KBBI's Desiree Hagen reports, some residents say inclusivity is important and they want the books to stay, while others want them removed completely.
A standing room only crowd of over 100 people packed into Homer City Hall last Tuesday for a marathon meeting of the Library Advisory Board. Around 6 dozen people gave public testimony, clocking the meeting at over 4 hours. At the center of the debate was whether the Homer Public Library Advisory Board should uphold a decision made by Library Director Dave Barry in early July. At that time, Barry chose to reject a request from petitioners who wanted certain LGBTQ titles to be moved from the children's wing to separate sections of the library or removed entirely.
We're asking that LGBTQ books, and the way we're defining LGBTQ books is books that have been marketed as such, so those books be moved into a section outside of that sectioned off area for the children when you go in the library. We don't want it in there.
That's Madeline Veldstra. She is a mother and children's author. Veldstra and other community members say they're afraid children might inadvertently stumble across the, quote, confusing ideas in these books. Initially, her petition mentioned just 3 titles. After the group's request was rejected by Library Director Barry in early July, Veldstra and others filed the petition with the city clerk's office to appeal his decision. And by late October, the group had added 4 dozen more titles to their list. The list is now being reviewed by the full Library Advisory Board. The 7-member board has the final decision on whether the books stay or go. Veldstra's group also created an online petition that, as of Monday morning, had almost 300 signatures. A separate petition in support of Barry's decision and the current library policy has over 1,000 signatures, twice the amount of those who want the books removed. Barry says challenges made by Veldstra's group on the LGBTQ titles were unprecedented and thinks that this is the first time there has been a petition like this in Homer.
In the past, we have had challenges over a variety of topics, but they've always been for specific titles, 1 or 2 books at a time. This is the first time we've ever had an appeal that was this sweeping.
Barry says the Homer Library vets their children's collection using common sources and standards that libraries across the country adhere to.
We definitely look for reviews in our trusted sources, and everything that we have on the list here is commonly held in a lot of other libraries as well.
Barry says the library has an established policy to assist staff and inform the public on its selection of library materials. Both Barry and former Homer Public Library Director Ann Dixon say backlash from groups targeting libraries that provide LGBTQ material is a trend happening nationwide. Earlier this summer in Ketchikan, a city council member tried to cancel a drag queen story time at the public library. Back at the Library Advisory Board meeting, emotions are running high. Those who want the LGBTQ material to remain in the children's section outnumber the petitioners about 2-1. Many of those who favor segregating the books are parents or grandparents concerned about what they call sexual themes in some of the titles. Defenders of the library's policy who want the books to remain in the children's collection emphasize the value of inclusivity. They say by singling out or segregating these books to their own section, the library would be sending a message to LGBTQ patrons that they are not welcome. The Library Advisory Board is set to make a decision at their next meeting in the new year. The public can submit written testimony before the meeting or testify in person on January 17th. In Homer, I'm Desiree Hagen.
This is KTOO News.